The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way. Something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Welcome back to the Did You Know Show, and this segment continues my look into the workings of the federal executive branch of government. Today's show focuses on a little-known aspect of the federal executive bureaucracy dealing with the historic preservation of our great nation. This executive endeavor is called the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. And for this segment, and for the sake of brevity, I will refer to this as the Advisory Council or the ACHP. This particular Advisory Council came into existence with the passage of the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, wherein legislation was passed in order to have federal agencies act in a specific manner. I quote from the Act. Responsible stewards of our nation's resources when their actions affect historic properties, specifically when referring to the federal executive agencies and departments. Now, don't think that by the swipe of the federal pen, all historic sites were protected by the governmental edict. No, this is not the case, because much of historic preservation had been going on for a very long time. In fact, Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, our first president, was first placed into a position of historic prominence, not by government edict, but by the efforts of one Ann Pamela Cunningham, who established the Mount Vernon Ladies Association of the Union in the year 1853. It should be noted from their own website that this organization is the oldest historic preservation organization in the country, and then Mount Vernon is the most popular historic estate site in the United States. It is visited by over 80 million people annually, and this at no cost to the taxpayers of the United States. Providing a brief historic look back, preservation did not stop there, and from Wikipedia we find the following information. In 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt signed into law the Antiquities Act, which prohibited the excavation of antiquities from public lands without a permit from the Secretary of the Interior. This act also gave the president the authority to declare a specific piece of land a national monument, thereby protecting it from scavengers. In 1916, the National Park Service was established, and in 1935, Congress passed the Historic Sites Act, which established a method of organization in order to run national parks, sites, and historic monuments. But back to the ACHP. The Historic Preservation Act, passed in 1966, established an Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. This act also established the State Historic Preservation Office, established the National Register of Historic Places, and finally provided for a review process under Section 106 of the Law of the Land. What the Section 106 process does, primarily it establishes the necessity for federal agencies to take under consideration when doing anything affected or associated with federal historic properties, the need to advise the ACHP and provide the Advisory Council a reasonable amount of time with agency officials as to what would be the effect of the agency action relating to the properties under the auspices of the ACHP. This action under Section 106 and codified under 36 CFR Part 800 provided for the framework and process of conducting business as to properties under the overview of the Advisory Council. One needs to understand, these regulations state with specificity the circumstances and types of action required. especially when these activities have any contact with historic properties, and specifically those properties which have a historic or cultural significance to Native Americans. Just for info, if interested in reading the specific actions as codified in the combined federal regulations, one will be required to read 16 pages of small type in order to get a true understanding of what one has or has not to do within the federal agencies when it comes to historical properties or properties of a significance to the historic or cultural interests of Native Americans. Additionally, one can go to the ACHP's website, and they provide a reasonable explanation of the process under Section 106. Now, as to the structure of this organization, according to Title II, Section 201, this ACHP is comprised of a council that includes the following statutorily designated members. These include a chairman, who is appointed by the president, the secretary of the Department of the Interior, the architect of the Capitol, the secretary of agriculture, and the heads of three other governmental agencies. One governor appointed by the president, one mayor appointed by the president of the National Conference of State Historic Preservation Officers, chairman of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, four experts in the field of historic preservation, including the fields of architecture, history, archaeology, and other appropriate discipline, all appointed by the president. Three at-large members of the public, also appointed by the president, and lastly, one member of an Indian tribe. These enumerated members add up to 19. However, when one goes to the ACHP website, one finds that the site states now that the membership of the council consists of 23 statutorily designated members. Recall the term federal bureaucracy? Maybe you can figure out, but my best guess is that from the time state statutes were enacted to today, changes have been made to the various regulations and additional positions have been added, i.e., incremental bureaucratic growth. As to time of service for these positions, I would refer the listener to the statute inasmuch as there are different time periods for different members. Additionally, members of the respective agencies are authorized by statute to be able to designate another officer of that department, agency, or organization to participate on their behalf as a member of the advisory council. Now, in my book, that's called passing the buck. For a lack of a different phrase, I guess they could call that a management prerogative. Generally speaking, though, these advisory council members within the government will be paid by their respective agencies. Those members not within the framework of the government will be in a per diem status in which their travel, accommodations, and subsistence are paid for by the taxpayers of the United States. This payment method is authorized by statute and generally amounts to a specific dollar per day amount when performing the duties relating to their participation as members of this advisory council. Additionally, there is an executive director, a general counsel, and their compensation is fixed by the executive director. Further, the executive director shall appoint or fix the compensation of such officers and employees in the competitive service as are necessary to perform their functions, but not to exceed the highest rate for grade 15 of the general schedule under Section 5332 of Title V. When looking further within the government site, I was able to locate a staff directory which identified additional members of this ACHP. Realize this, no self-respecting governmental entity would not have a staff and other personnel necessary to carry out the actions of this governmental body known as the ACHP. In fact, I counted up 41 additional staff members, ranging in nomenclature from analyst to liaison to director to this or that. I tried to pull up an organizational chart which would have explained more effectively who I would have to contact for which aspect of the historic preservation program. But alas, that designated location click did not work on their internet site. Oh well, I guess that's just government. As to funding, this is one of the very small agencies within the federal executive bureaucracy, but operates as a government entity. In fiscal 2013, their budget was $6.1 million, which is a very small authorization under the Historic Preservation Fund authorized by Congress. But there are other funds that are available, and they do have some say to how those funds are put out. Now, as to the what, this advisory council of 19 or 23, they, the membership, meet four times per year and conduct the business of the ACHP. Now, that business is meeting to discuss and formulate plans, suggestions, initiatives, and budgetary needs relating to, and I quote, the preservation, enhancement, and sustainable use of our nation's diverse historic resources, and advise the President and Congress on the nation's historic preservation policy. Within this Council of 23, there are also three standing committees with responsibility relating to, first, preservation initiatives, to focus on partnership and program initiatives with state, local, Indian tribes, and private sector, communications, education, and outreach, to constituents and the general public through information and education programs, and lastly, federal agency programs, to administer the National Historic Preservation Act Section 106 review process and work with applicable federal agencies. The advisory committee functions on a budget of approximately that $6 million. However, there are, through other federal agencies, Indian organizations, states, and not-for-profit groups that make funds available to various projects. These would include the State Historic Preservation Office, the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, the Department of the Interior, and other bodies handing out grants within the federal government. Within the context of historic preservation, these monies can't move until the Advisory Council has conducted its work under Section 106. It should be also noted that the ACHP does not give out grants, but is a clearinghouse for that activity. I quote directly from their website. Please remember that individuals cannot apply directly to the federal government for most federal historic preservation funding. Such money generally goes to state, tribal, or local governments and nonprofit organizations. Well, that's the Advisory Committee on Historic Preservation. But before I end, there's one bit of info I'd like to kind of pass on to you, my listeners. While doing the research on this advisory committee, several items struck me as informative. First was the amount of involvement of this group into the activities of those involved in historical preservation. And then lastly, it struck me quite interestingly that this organization's activities are not all open to the public. And I'll just read the following to you. Under their Section C, authority to withhold from disclosure, states, the head of a federal agency or other public official receiving grant assistance pursuant to this act, after consultation with the secretary, shall withhold from disclosure to the public information about the location, character, or ownership of a historic resource if the secretary and the agency determine that disclosure may, and there are three instances, one, cause a significant invasion of privacy, two, risk harm to the historic resources, or three, impede the use of a traditional religious site by practitioner. This last bit of info was taken from Title 36, Chapter 8, Part 800, Subpart B of the Section 8, Section 106 process. Now, for you, my listeners, I took a little work in hand. I copied and pasted this to a Word format and came out with 23 pages and 10,138 words. And this was only one part out of five under this section of Chapter 8. Remember the 16 pages mentioned previously as to the Federal Register? That turned into 23 pages just previously, and if you've ever wondered why this government and its process are so bogged down, the plain and simple answer is paperwork and words upon words of regulations and more regulations that overwhelm and discourage the average citizen. However, it does not discourage the special interest groups who are familiar with the regulatory process and take advantage of that special knowledge. So now you have a better understanding of this process relating to historic preservation and how the ball game operates.
Well, until next time in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.